Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Right, well, before we start this podcast, just a little note of warning to do with the sound. This was actually recorded at Kumar Sangakkara's flat in central London, well, the flat that he's staying in anyway over the summer as he does his various broadcast commitments. Me and Kumar sat down during the heat wave, so it was pretty hot in there, so we left one of the windows open, and so that's what you might hear during the podcast, is the occasional sound of a train going by on the London Underground, or maybe even a siren or two in the background. Just to let you know, I didn't edit those in there, they are there on the recording. Anyway, I hope you do enjoy it. It was an absolute pleasure to sit down with Kumar, and without any further ado, here is part one of two of the Kumar Sangakkara Lord's Cricket Podcast.
And I'm playing this match in Moratuwa, and I went into batting well, got to 100. Dav Watmore was the national team coach.
Yeah.
Walks in to the dressing room just to see what's going on. I hit a six that goes through the window of the dressing room. And that's the only time he had turned around and asked, "Oh, who's batting?"
You're listening to the Lord's Cricket Podcast with me, Will Rowe. These are the stories from the home of cricket, with the people that made them. Kumar Sangakkara, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing?
Thank you. Yeah, I'm very well. Great to be here.
Thanks for coming on the Lord's Cricket Podcast. It's an absolute honour to have you here. We're going to go down memory lane today, back to 2014 at Lord's Cricket Ground, when you did what all cricketers sort of dream of doing, is getting on the honours board. Just before we do that, was that always in your sights as a player?
No, not really, because when I started, I was just concerned about, you know, staying in the side, cementing a place in there and getting a regular game. So I made my debut in 2000 in a one-day triangular where South Africa and Pakistan also played. And then had a really good run in that tournament. But then after that, the three tests against South Africa and Sri Lanka, I hardly did anything of note.
Yeah.
Other than, I think, miss a catch or two behind the stumps and then have a higher score of 23. But I was asked to bat number three, I think, in the second innings in that third test at the SSC. I got about 12 or 13, really, and I thought that was it for my test career. I'll be a one-day player. But there, Dav Watmore and Sanath Jayasurya, who was captaining at that time, took a risk and took me to South Africa and asked me to bat number three in tests as well. Got a few runs there, and that's how the journey, test cricket journey, started.
And what a journey it would turn out to be. It all began on the 27th of October in 1977 when Kumar Sangakkara was born in Martalay, his father's hometown just north of the central Sri Lankan city of Kandy. Kandy is where he grew up. One of four children, Kumar spent his youth playing many sports at school, with cricket not always the main one.
So I grew up in Kandy all my life, went to Trinity College in Kandy, which is a fantastic school, it still is, probably the premier educational institute in Sri Lanka. It was a boarding school, but had day scholars as well. I was a day scholar.
Yeah.
So didn't play a lot of cricket in my younger days. I was doing other things. I was playing badminton, table tennis, I was swimming.
Right.
And cricket was something I played for a bit of fun. I played at home. We had a front yard where we played with friends. A lot of tennis ball stuff. My father tried to encourage us, to both my brother and I, to pick up cricket.
Yeah.
and we it was not, I never had a childhood ambition of playing for Sri Lanka. I just played it because it was fun. I was concentrating more on tennis. And then I think I had a few childhood coaches. His name was Upananda Jayasundara. He used to come home and give me a few lessons just because my father insisted that I should learn the technique. So I would have been about 11. And then had a few other classes here and there. And then I started, I tried out for the Trinity College under 13 team. And I remember the coach at that time saying, we don't have a wicket keeper. Does anyone know how to keep wickets? I wanted to play that 11, so I just put my hand up and said, I'll keep wickets. I've never kept wickets in my life. So I got the gloves. So that's how I started my wicket keeping. That's why I never considered myself a natural born wicket keeper. I had to work and really train hard to at it over the years. So I played under 13 cricket, and by about under 14, my father found me another coach who was at the rival school, who would coach Muralidharan. His name was Mr. Sunil Fernando. And the coach at Trinity was Mr. Bertie Vijay Singh, who passed away, unfortunately, a couple of years ago. And I remember the first day of when he took over at Trinity, Bertie Vijay Singh, he came in, and one of my friends had brought a helmet to training, kept it, and we're in a little semicircle. And Mr. Vijay Singh has spent most of his time in England. He's from the old school of cricket. He's a lovely man, very tough on discipline. And as he was talking to us about what we were going to do that day, he looked down and saw this helmet. He just looked at it for about a couple of seconds and kicked it. And I remember it rolling and then falling into this big drain. And he just looked at us and said, "Who brought this bloody junk?" Said, "The next time someone brings a helmet, that's the last time he's going to come here and practice." And we were just young kids. We're like, "What? No helmets?" He said, no one's going to wear a helmet. So we were forbidden from wearing helmets at training or in matches.
Wow.
At under 13. I remember the first time I wore a helmet was when I was about 16, 17. And I played my first second 11 game for my school at under 19 level without a helmet. And the only boy who was allowed a helmet was one of our openers. And when he was at under 15 level, I remember, who got hit on the head facing a fast bowler. And after he had his x-rays and all these other concussion tests, he was the only one allowed to wear a helmet. So it was just a case of telling us, you got to learn how to wash the ball.
Do you think it aided your development as a player? Or?
I really don't know. I never got hit on the head batting, so I wouldn't know.
You couldn't afford to.
I have mixed feelings about that. I just think that when you're a kid, if you do get hit badly, that instills a sense of fear in you, and that might actually stunt your development.
Yeah,
psychologically, it's a big blow. Safety is a very important thing, but so it was just a case. I remember being made to bat without the thigh pad, just so that at under, I think it was under 17 level, just because to ensure that I would hit the ball with the bat. So I had no thigh pad, and I remember getting hit about 3 or 4 times. I had this big bruises down my thigh, and it's just a case of, no, just get your bat to the ball. There's a school of hard knocks, almost literally, figuratively. But you know, that's what we're asked to do, and you know, it's like the light brigade, you know, asks us not to question why, but to, you know, asks us but to do or die. So that was kind of the harsh training that you had when I was growing up. I'm sure it would have been the same in those days, you know. I used to spend proper training in the sense of team training at Trinity, and then go to St. Anthony's College, the rival school, to be trained in technique by Mr. Sunil Fernando. And I remember at when I was about 15, I didn't go willingly, because no child wants to spend his weekends going to a cement net and having throwdowns and just technical work drilled into day after day. Number one, I wasn't thinking of a long career in cricket. It was just doing something. But my father insisted, if you're spending a lot of time doing something, just learn to do it well.
Yeah.
That's the only reason why I was pushed and driven there by him, and he would stay there and watch every second of it, and would actually try and butt in over the coach to tell me what was wrong or what was right. So I remember at 15, Murali was 14, 15, I think, and then suddenly Mr. Sunil Fernando said, I just want a bowler to come and bowl at you, and it turned out to be Murali. So he was about 4 or 5 years senior to me, and he was already a big name in school cricket. And he came and bowled to me on the cement track. And I remember him just, I missed almost every ball, I think. He's just turning it so much on a cement net. It is incredible. I didn't know who this guy was at that time.
Yeah.
Good bowler, wasn't he?
He can turn it.
Yeah, he can turn it a bit as I was 15. But still, tennis was taking up most of my time.
Really?
And then I probably switched to cricket very, very seriously after when I was about 17.
At this point, Kumar was picked to play in the Under-17 World Cup, but by his own admission, he didn't set the world alight, so he continues his studies at Trinity College, but still keeps his cricket going.
And I played through Under-19, had one good year at Under-19, and by that time, my contemporaries, Mahila Jayawardena, Tilan Samaravira, Avishka Gunawardena, they were the big, big names in school cricket. They were earmarked for the national team, for international duty. Even at 15, when you saw Mahila bat, you knew the guy's just going to walk into the side by the time he's ready. I just flew under the radar because I was not making scores of significance that warranted space in any newspaper.
Let's pause now for a moment on Kumar's cricket career. In 1983, when Kumar was aged just 6, a civil war in Sri Lanka broke out. Ethnic tensions between the majority Sinhalese and the Tamil minority in the northeast of the country would last for over 25 years before a ceasefire was finally declared in May 2009. These turbulent times were the inescapable backdrop to Kumar's childhood and early adult life.
Not just for me, but for my generation. I born in 1977. I remember that the riots started in 1983. So I grew up through that. We had a lot of our friends who were Tamil hiding out in our house. I remember my father having all of them at home. I was having a great time with all the kids. We were playing cricket, football, all of these things in the front yard. I didn't realize the gravity of what was happening until my father explained to me later, because I went and stupidly asked him, does this happen every year? This is great. All my friends are here. And he wasn't very happy at the question. But that's, to a six-year-old, that's what it seemed like. And then the war started, and then we had a JVP insurrection through the universities in Sri Lanka. So there's the north and the east are fighting. Then in the southern, in the hills, and in the south, the JVP issue. So we had school closures. There were, sites that children are not supposed to see on the sites with, dead bodies, bombs going off here and there, sporadically. But still, when you're in Kandy, when you're in Colombo, you were affected more by the JVP than probably by the war in the north and the east. You were almost far removed from the war. And you only spoke about it when there was a suicide bomb, right, or a big, like the Fort railway station bomb or the central bank explosion.
The JVP were one of the leftist groups.
They were a Marxist,
yeah.
Revolution was, I think, what they were talking about, which is an armed insurrection. So there were shop closures, school closures, executions, assassinations, all of these things happening. So it was this very, I don't know whether I can say this personally dangerous, I don't know, but it was this really strange, is an understatement, really. It was this really funny, weird, surreal, horrific, all of these words together that growing up. But then it's strange as well, because you have to learn to deal with all of these things really quickly, because life goes on. And life, in a lot of instances, had to go on as normal. You made adjustments for all of the things that were happening, the contingencies in place, or if this happened, that happened, or so many friends, I had a friend who I grew up with, who joined the police but was stationed in the north and the east. He was coming back for his wedding, and just before, I think 4 o'clock in the morning was the train. His camp was attacked at about 1, and that was the last we've ever heard of him. He was never found. So he's listed as killed in action or missing in action.
In 1996, led by Arjuna Ranatunga and inspired by Aravinda De Silva, Sri Lanka won the Cricket World Cup in Pakistan. Beating Australia in the final, it was a true David and Goliath moment as the small island nation achieved the unthinkable. It was a moment that united a divided country.
And people just flocked to TVs. You know, you had these shop windows that had shops selling TVs, and you had all these TV screens in the window. You had about 100, 200 people gathered at every shop window watching, because they had a game on at some point. So it was this amazing thing to see how important cricket became for social harmony, because when you congregated around that, it didn't matter who you were, ethnicity, religion, whatever background, you just watched and you just enthralled by cricket. And the cricket team also was a multi-ethnic, multi-religious group of people playing. So that was also like a little beacon of hope. And then Murali doing what he did over those years, incredible. So
is that because Murali was a Tamil?
Murali was Tamil, but...
Or is Tamil, yeah.
Yeah, he's Tamil. And it's amazing how that no one cares, no one talks about, no one says it, because all they're watching is this amazing talent.
Yeah.
You know, winning games for Sri Lanka, and you know that so it is lovely to see that there was no mention of ethnicity there. There was no kind of disenfranchisement, you know, from the team saying, "Oh, you know, nothing." Everyone, you know, the largest Sri Lankan community, you know, after 83, things had progressed a long way. Still, we have a long way to go. Mm. But so you see that there is always this this great possibility that Sri Lanka can progress beyond all this petty divisiveness. And cricket was what offered that hope. But me personally, I think I've led a very sheltered life in Sri Lanka. You know, I've been exposed, I've experienced it, but never firsthand, like some of my friends and other Sri Lankans have around the country, be it in the south, be it in the north and the east. For 30 years in the north and the east, you can only imagine. You know, the government forces, the civilians, even if you were a terrorist combatant, the way the conflict, the war shaped lives, would have been just incredibly harsh. So I think I sometimes feel guilty being asked that question, what was your experience? Because my experience seems almost trivial when compared to a larger amount of Sri Lankans out there. But, you know, at least I'm glad I played a part, at least a bit through cricket, to kind of offer a little beacon of a little light of hope that there is a possibility, not just that we had this glorious sport, but the sport was played by this kind of a little microscopic representation of an ideal Sri Lanka. You know, everyone playing together, not caring, you know, who you were, where you came from, religion, ethnicity, just playing together, you know, doing what you want, what you had to do to win, you know, success for Sri Lanka.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
As we heard earlier, Kumar wasn't a standout player during his youth compared to the likes of Mahela Jayawardena, for one. So it was off to university to study law. Arriving in Colombo, he found a part-time job at a computer firm to kill time whilst he waited for his degree to start. It was at that time that Kumar joined the famous nondescript cricket club in Colombo, known as the NCC, but it was purely by accident, as he'd originally been on his way to join the neighbouring team, Colombo Cricket Club, a story he remembers with fondness.
So I was walking past NCC, the front gate, to cross the road, go to CCC and sign up. And suddenly, someone called my name, I turned around, it was a Mr. Asoka De Silva, who was an umpire, international test umpire at that time. He'd also umpired in a few of the domestic games I had played in at school level. So he said, where are you going? What are you doing in Colombo? I said, I'm just going to CCC to join up. He said, why go there when you got NCC? I said, I don't know really. He says, come on in, let's have a chat. So I walked in through the gate. He said, you know, this is a great club to play for. You get a lot of opportunity to play because all the international players go on tour. And when you say international players, Aravinda De Silva, Russell Arnold, Hashan Tilkaratna, Ravindra Pushpakumar, Sajiva Silva. Then you had the A-team players, you know, about another four. So I was thinking, how am I going to even get a place here? He said, no, they all go on tour. You don't worry, you can come. We don't have a regular wicketkeeper. I wasn't really fast. So I said, yeah, okay, fine. Yeah, I'll join up. You know, because I signed up, called my friend and said, I'm sorry, I can't come to CCC. I've just signed up NCC. And I started playing. So that's how my first class career started. I got a regular place in the first year. And we won the one-day championship, not because I did great things, but we had a fantastic team. We had some three fantastic young players who unfortunately fell away after about 4 or 5 years. They were fantastic players. I still keep in touch with them. The second year, Prasanna Jayawardena joins NCC and takes the gloves off me because he was a far better wicketkeeper than I was.
Later to do it in test matches.
And this first year, I played every game. Second year, I spent most of my time on the bench because we had Aravinda De Silva coming back because he wanted to play for the team again. He's been out of the national side for 2 years after the disastrous 99 World Cup.
Yeah.
Where we as the defending champions were knocked out in the first round. I don't think it's ever happened before for a defending champion. I'm not sure that to be knocked out in that first round.
I'd have to check the stats. I haven't done that research. Yeah.
So Hashan Tilakaratna's been out of the side as well. So they were all trying to make a comeback. So so I hardly got a game. And I spent my time time there carrying drinks, doing a few other things, you know. And we also had an under 23 team, which gave me an opportunity to play. So not just the first team. So I was given a chance to open 1 year at under 23 level. And I had a great year. So maybe, the great year. And then I was put into the A side suddenly. And we were touring South Africa. So 98, I went on an A team tour to South Africa. Did very well in the one days. And that was the time when, 98-99, that was when the World Cup disaster happened.
Yeah.
And suddenly the selectors and the public said, oh, this is an aging team. Outrage at being the champions in 1996 and 3 years later being knocked out in the first round. We need to get rid of the old guard, get some youngsters in. So a huge amount of younger players got pushed through. I still didn't. I was dropped from the next A-team tour to England. Then I was given another opportunity to play an A-team tour against Zimbabwe in Sri Lanka. And I remember going to the gym. I was due to play a 4-day test match against the A-side, the first game of the tour. Rangana Herath, whom I've known since I was 15, is sitting in the gym. And I go and I kind of slap him on the head just in fun. And he just kicks out at me. And I just swat his foot away. The edge of his shoe hits my pinky on my right hand and slices it open.
Ooh.
So 5 sutures later, I'm out for 2.5-3 weeks. I miss most of the 4-day unofficial test tour. So that was a big blow for me. And then suddenly I get well. They put me back into the one-day team. And I'm playing this match in Moratuwa. And I went into batting well, got to 100. Dav Watmore was the national team coach.
Yeah.
Walks in to the dressing room just to see what's going on. I hit a 6 that goes through the window of the dressing room. And that's the only time he turned around and asked, oh, who's batting? So I said, that's the first time I think he ever even heard my name. And then suddenly I was drafted as a reserve into the test side and then into the one-day side.
And so Kumar embarked on one of the finest cricketing careers the game has ever seen, making his test debut aged 22 in 2000 against South Africa at Goole, captained by Sanath Jayasuriya in a team featuring Mathai Muralitharan, Russell Arnold, Chaminda Vaas and Mahela Jayawardena. Kumar scored 23 in his first test innings. We chatted about how he felt coming into that side.
Very nervous, really. I was given my cap. And at that time, we didn't have a huge ceremony about caps. Caps were a dime a dozen, really. You know, in the sense of, you just got your cap. You never really were asked to take care of it. And that was never the only cap you were going to get. If you lost it, you could get another cap. But just the walking into the dressing room and then looking at the players. You know, Sanath, incredible player. Marvin, you know. Mahela was, you know, such sublime form at that time. Then Murali, Vasi. It is just, you know, incredible. And then I remember, I think test matches I batted number 5.
Yeah, you were 5 in the match. It was against South Africa at Goole. Yeah, that's
the... Yeah, and even in the one days, I was, I think, put down to bat at 7. And I think Murali was one of the guys who said, no, he's making his debut. Number 7 is too low for him in the one day, as he needs to bat number 5. He needs to have he needs to be given a chance to build an innings. You know, so Murray was one guy whose words were listened to, and I was offered number 5 in one day. So although I batted from number 1 to number 9 in one day later on, but my first, so I did well. So they kept me there in the test series. So. Yeah, it was overwhelming, but I had Mahela, who I've known again since I was 15 through school cricket. He was a very senior player. You know, he's made his debut 2.5 to maybe 3 years ahead of me. So he was well-established, so we had a good rapport. I had played with Russell Arnold at NCC, so I knew him really well. So you had a few players who you could think of as contemporaries, to kind of lean on, have a chat to, and kind of relax you into the dressing room.
You've been listening to the Lord's Cricket Podcast with me, Will Rowe. The stories from the home of cricket and the people that made them. That was part one of two of the Kumar Sangakkara story. In the second part, Kumar chats to me about his last test match at Lord's, where he finally manages to get his name on the famous honours boards. If you've enjoyed this episode, please take a listen to part two.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.